This is The Shape of Texas.
Sundance Square in downtown Fort Worth is a thriving entertainment district of restaurants, movie theaters, galleries, museums, and shops that occupy buildings dating to the turn of the 19th century. But it wasn't always this way. That 16-block area is named for the Sundance Kid, who was the sidekick of outlaw Butch Cassidy. They were among the gamblers and the gunfighters who claimed it as their territory in the late 1800s, a blighted area also known as Hell's Half Acre. For decades, the historic buildings deteriorated, but in the 1970s, local business leaders Charles Tandy, founder of the Tandy Corporation and Radio Shack chain, and the billionaire Bass family began investing in downtown, and their action spurred other renovation projects. Many buildings are finished in brick that have been embellished with glazes or terracotta detailing, and which are laid in distinctive patterns. Window details include carved stone trims and decorative arches. The red brick Knights of Pythias Castle Hall on Main Street is one of the area's signature structures. It was built in 1901 and was renovated during the early 1980s. It resembles a small castle with a gabled slate roof, corner turret, and side gables. A niche in the front gable holds a 7-foot suit of armor. The building is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. A narrow building on Main Street also is notable, but more for art than for architecture. A mural of the Chisholm Trail Cattle Drive by Richard Haas captivates visitors. Its three-dimensional illusion is called Trompe l'Oeil, French for trick of the eye. A cast iron clock dating to 1912 and other endangered streetscape elements, including brick-paved streets, have been preserved in Sundance Square, fitting reminders of a past always present in downtown Fort Worth. Walk past the Bass Performance Hall in downtown Fort Worth, and with a little imagination, you might hear a fanfare. Sound far-fetched? Look up at the pair of 48-foot-tall angels hovering over the facade of the hall. With long, slender brass trumpets in hand, they're poised to proclaim that culture lives in downtown Cowtown. Sculptor Martin Varro created the bas-relief angels with more than 100 blocks of cream-colored Texas limestone. They've become symbols of downtown renewal. The $71 million performance hall opened in 1998, paid for in private funds. It's named for Fort Worth philanthropists Nancy Lee and Perry R. Bass. Their son, Edward Bass, chose David M. Schwartz of Washington, D.C. as the design architect. Schwartz borrowed elements from great concert halls of the past to make the building fit in with local historic architecture. The hall is constructed with marble and limestone and fills a city block. The main entrance and the monumental windows at street level are positioned close to the sidewalk, providing a pedestrian-scaled connection to what's happening inside. Seating for more than 2,000 is arranged in horseshoe-shaped tiers, a design influenced by Carnegie Hall in New York. A dome measuring 80 feet in diameter is painted with celestial scenes by Fort Worth artists Scott and Stuart Gintling. Other architectural details are quite modern. Lighting and railings are constructed with brushed aluminum and steel. A unique sound shell surrounds the stage with acoustic towers finished in exotic hardwood veneers. The multipurpose hall is home to the Fort Worth Symphony Orchestra, the ballet, the opera, and the Van Cliburn International Piano Competition. It also hosts musicals and concerts. Just as its benefactors envisioned, the Bass Performance Hall has become part of the fabric of urban life in a vibrant downtown. Horses have clip-clopped through much of Fort Worth's history. They're still important in this modern cowtown, enshrined in monuments all over the city. But one especially stands out as a symbol of Fort Worth's Western heritage. It's the historic horse watering trough downtown. The original was constructed in 1892 on the southeast corner of the Tarrant County Courthouse lawn. The Woman's Humane Society had it built to give thirsty horses a free drink while their riders were visiting town. With its fanciful bronze horse on top, the fountain became a favorite gathering place for people, too. Over the years, the original fountain crumbled. The horse sculpture disappeared, although a replica survived. In 1983, preservationists began a drive to restore the landmark. The effort faltered until Mrs. W.K. Gordon, Jr. made a generous donation in memory of her grandfathers, two early community leaders. The children of Tarrant County helped with a penny drive and a campaign to name the horse, now called Pennysworth. Together, they raised about $285,000. Architect Arthur Weinman of Fort Worth worked from old photographs and drawings of stone carvings to preserve the historical integrity of the fountain. However, he chose sturdier white concrete for the troughs rather than the original sandstone. Hard Indiana limestone and pink granite form the monument that rises above the troughs in columns and arches. In time, it will weather to match the courthouse granite. As with much of downtown Fort Worth's renovation, here the new complements the old. The new horse sculpture is an aluminum casting made from one of the replicas. It prances, tail flaring, atop the 25-foot fountain, rededicated in 1999 for Fort Worth's sesquicentennial. Once again, water cascades into curved basins, and thirsty horses can get a drink downtown. This time, they're ridden by Fort Worth's mounted police. When the Flatiron Building opened in downtown Fort Worth in 1907, the seven-story structure was the tallest building in North Texas. Even more distinctive was its triangular footprint and shape, designed to fit a wedge-shaped lot. It was inspired by the famous Flatiron Building in New York City. The Fort Worth version and several others took their name from the shape of an old-fashioned clothing iron. Techniques developed in the late 19th century, including steel frameworks and reinforced concrete, made these triangular buildings possible. Local architects Sanguinet and Statz designed the Fort Worth Flatiron with the elegant proportions and rich ornamentation of the Chicago School of Architecture, exemplified by the renowned Louis Sullivan. A two-story base supports five upper floors topped with a pressed metal cornice. A horizontal limestone band between the levels include carved panther heads, a symbol of Fort Worth. Bold geometric patterns also decorate the tan brick facade. It's divided into 13 vertical bays with large operable windows. Each bay is topped with an arch. A prominent physician, Dr. Bacon Saunders, built the Flatiron with his medical office on the top floor. In later years, the building declined and stood empty. But another physician, Dr. George Cravens, bought the building in 1994 and began bringing it back to life. The exterior has been restored, interior work is refurbishing ceramic tile floors, marble wainscoting, and an elevator with a wrought iron cage. Plans for the building include stylish apartments, an upscale restaurant, and a community room. This beloved Fort Worth landmark is the only Flatiron building in the Southwest and one of five listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Restoration architect Raymond O'Connor.
The combination of elegant proportions, a fairly small structure with beautiful, precise, and delicate details is what most people see here, and it's magical.
The sound of water cascading, gurgling, and roaring fills the air at the Fort Worth Water Gardens. Located on the southern edge of downtown, the 4.5-block garden is an oasis in the urban landscape. It's been recognized as one of the nation's finest urban designs and has become a refuge for residents and visitors alike since it opened in 1974. New York architects Philip Johnson and John Berge used the natural colors of aggregate stone to form raised and sunken plazas, walls, ledges, and a 20-foot-high mountain of concrete tiers. The architects initially were criticized for using so much concrete in a hot, dry climate, but it allowed them to create a man-made mountain scene with minimalist sculptural forms suggesting riverbeds, canyon walls, and boulders. About 19,000 gallons of water flow through the gardens each minute. Visitors experience water in all its moods, placidly cascading in sheets down a 25-foot-tall wall, flowing over ledges, shimmering in a quiet pool, or roaring in the active pool, the garden's focal point. There, water tumbles from hidden troughs down multiple tiers of concrete into a pool 38 feet below ground level. Stepping stones allow visitors to walk down into the waterfall and be surrounded by the power of water without getting soaked. More than 500 species of plants and trees, including bald cypress and Bradford pear, create a forest-like environment. Azaleas, junipers, Indian hawthorn, and English ivy provide a richly textured ground cover. The Amon G. Carter Foundation built the water garden at a cost of $6 million, and the city of Fort Worth operates it. But it took Philip Johnson's vision to highlight water, a precious resource in Texas, in this urban setting.
The Texas and Pacific Railway Terminal, on the southern edge of downtown Fort Worth, was the city's version of Grand Central Station during the heyday of passenger train travel. The president of the railroad, John L. Lancaster, built the terminal in 1931. The railroad put up $13 million for the project. The city kicked in $3 million. The Fort Worth architectural and engineering firm of Wyatt C. Hedrick designed the 12-story terminal and a nearby warehouse in an expressive geometric Art Deco style called Zigzag Moderne. The building is constructed with pale buff brick trimmed with carved limestone, terracotta, and marble. Rows of windows are recessed in vertical panels. Corner towers anchor the building. The upper stories were leased for offices. Tunnels led to the trains. But rail passenger service to Fort Worth stopped in 1967. The building changed hands several times. New owners have renovated the terminal. In late 2001, it became a stop for the Trinity Railway Express's commuter line between Fort Worth and Dallas. The building's owners are turning the office space into condominiums. The architectural and engineering firm Gideon Toll of Fort Worth handled the $1.4 million renovations. Nickel and bronze front doors open onto a large waiting room. It gleams with polished light gray marble floors and wainscoting of pink and dark red granite. The ceiling of cast plaster dances with geometric designs, flowing plant shapes, and spirals finished in gold and silver leaf and enamel. Massive frosted glass chandeliers with geometric Art Deco lines provide soft light. Artists at Smith Studios of Fort Worth restored them and the other glasswork. The Texas and Pacific Railway Terminal once again is abuzz with people, whether they are rail passengers or partygoers attending special events. Indeed, in its role in Fort Worth's daily life, the building has come full circle. A red brick mansion called Thistle Hill rose as a symbol of Fort Worth's rich and powerful in the early 1900s. It was the elegant home of cattle barons, the Texas royalty at the time. Cattleman W.T. Wagner built the 11,000-square-foot residence for his daughter, Electra. It was a gift to keep her in Texas with her new husband, Albert Wharton, who came from a prominent Philadelphia family. The home sat on a hilltop southwest of downtown in the fashionable Quality Hill neighborhood. Fort Worth architects Sanguinet and Statz designed Thistle Hill in the colonial style with cast stone trim and a sloping roof with green shingles. Wood columns framed the entry portico, and a second-story porch wrapped around the front. Inside, the 18-room mansion included Tiffany Palladian windows, elaborate woodwork, and a dramatic horseshoe-shaped staircase. Electra and Albert Wharton entertained lavishly, and Thistle Hill became the center of Fort Worth's social scene. In 1911, they sold the house to cattleman Winfield Scott and his wife Elizabeth. They opted for more opulence and, with extensive renovation, converted the home to the Georgian Revival style. Wrought iron replaced wooden decorative elements. Green tiles, imported from Italy, covered the roof. Marble columns were installed on the front porch. In 1938, the Scott's son sold the mansion to a philanthropic organization for underprivileged girls. The group moved out in 1968, and the home stood empty until 1976. Then a community organization raised $240,000 to purchase it and to make repairs. The nonprofit group, Texas Heritage Incorporated, continues to operate and restore the home as a living museum. Thistle Hill bustles again. It's open for tours and is a popular site for weddings. Music and chatter echo in the great rooms much as they did a century ago in this castle of the cattle barons. A Victorian mansion nestles among the modern office buildings west of downtown Fort Worth. Its gabled roofline, tall chimneys, and spires jump out among the glass and steel rectangles. The Ball Edelman McFarland House, built in 1899, is one of Fort Worth's best examples of Queen Anne-style Victorian architecture. The house perches on a high bluff overlooking the Trinity River in a neighborhood called Quality Hill, where wealthy cattle barons once lived. Few of those homes remain. This historic house not only survived, but also is mostly unchanged from its original design by English architect Howard Messer. It was built for a well-to-do Galveston widow named Sarah Ball. After she died in 1904, a Weatherford banker and cattle drover, William Harrison Edelman, bought the home. His daughter, Carrie McFarland, was the last permanent resident. The exterior includes red Colorado sandstone and pale yellow-pressed brick. A large porch with a round portico and pink Georgian marble floor graces the front. Carved sandstone columns and balustrades, copper finials, and a slate tile roof also highlight the exterior. The craftsmanship continues inside with polished parquet floors and ornate woodwork on mantels and window trim. The stunning coffered ceiling looks like it's constructed of intricate wooden boxes. Most of the wood is oak. A finer white Honduran mahogany is used in the formal parlor. Victorians like to incorporate a theme into their homes. Here, it's the egg and dart pattern, symbolizing life and death. Carved ovals interspersed with triangular motifs repeat in the ornamental trim inside and outside. In 1978, the Junior League of Fort Worth purchased the home and began restoring it. 5 years later, it gave the house to Historic Fort Worth Incorporated, a preservation group. The Ball Edelman McFarland House is open for tours and special events. Step inside and get a rare glimpse of a Victorian jewel whose original opulence still glows. In 1960, Fort Worth got a new, modern expressway. The Interstate 30 overhead allowed motorists to speed past downtown on a raised freeway. But it also had an unwanted effect. It cut off the southern end of downtown. The concrete pillars and roadway separated some of the city's most interesting and historic buildings from the rest of downtown. The overhead loomed above Lancaster Avenue, making it feel cramped and dark. 40 years later, the Texas Department of Transportation, working with the city, relocated the interstate farther south across the Union Pacific Railroad tracks. The old overhead was dismantled, and by 2002, it was gone. That opened the way for Lancaster Avenue to undergo its own transformation. Fort Worth voters in 1998 approved bond money to redevelop the street between the eastern and western edges of downtown. With additional state and federal funds, the project will total about $14 million. City planners saw that redesigning Lancaster Avenue wasn't just a street project, it was a catalyst to revitalize the southern end of downtown. A team of community activists, city leaders, and urban design experts developed a concept to turn Lancaster Avenue into a landscaped boulevard. They envisioned a wide, four-lane divided street with a 14-foot-wide median. EDAW, an international planning and design firm, and Gideon Toll of Fort Worth were selected as the design consultants. About 90 feet of the westbound right-of-way will be sold for private development. City planners expect the Grand Boulevard to attract office, retail, and residential space. It also will complement nearby attractions, including the Fort Worth Convention Center and the Water Gardens. Even before the Lancaster Avenue project was completed, downtown Fort Worth started to feel whole again after tearing down a piece of the past that divided it. In 1928, retailer Montgomery Ward built a regional warehouse center west of downtown Fort Worth. It stored goods that customers ordered from the company's catalog and included a retail store on the ground floor. Fort Worth contractor Thomas S. Byrne built the 8-story structure of reinforced concrete with rows of large square windows. Mission Revival details softened the boxy lines with arched windows and iron balconies on the top floor. Parapets capped stairwells at the building's midsection and corners. In 1949, the nearby Trinity River flooded, inundating the building up to the second story. After a massive cleanup, Ward's continued to expand. In the 1960s, the company added a distribution center and erected a giant red neon sign spelling out Montgomery Ward above the warehouse roof. Blue tile and glazed brick installed around the entryway to the retail store lent a modern look. Disaster struck again in the year 2000 when a tornado hit downtown Fort Worth, damaging the distribution center and killing a worker. Changes in retail trends struck another blow. Ward's went out of business in 2001. The complex stood vacant. The story could have ended with a wrecking ball, but in 2004, developers announced a $50 million residential and retail development called Montgomery Plaza. The original contracting company renovated the former warehouse. Floors 2 through 8 are for condominiums. Specialty retailers and restaurants occupy the ground floor. Removal of the 1960s-era tile and glazed brick around the entryway revealed arched windows which were restored. Stucco exterior walls were painted off-white. A dramatic six-story cutout in the former warehouse provides pedestrians and motorists access to a shopping center built at the rear of the property that's anchored by a Super Target store. This mixed-use development is offering urban dwellers a central place to shop, dine, and live within minutes of downtown. As for that iconic red neon sign, now it says Montgomery Plaza. For The Shape of Texas, produced by South Texas Public Broadcasting, I'm Bill Clough. Funding is provided by Texas Architect Magazine and the Texas Society of Architects at texasarchitect.org.